We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Week 3 NFL, food for thought. All I can say is wow. As if I, you know, didn't have enough of the first couple of weeks of action here. I missed the Aaron Rodgers all-timer when I was on vacation and I had the commish fill in with my good friend Will Priester. And this league is insane, Chief. It's just surprise after surprise, and that's why we love it so much. How are you? Good to see you again. Welcome to Poop for Thought, everybody.
Yeah, man, absolutely. So glad to be on with you, of course, and just happy to come in and talk a little bit of NFL for sure. Definitely exciting times here. Definitely exciting times in the league. And, you know, I will say – the NFL, like MLB, in a nutshell, it can be so unpredictable in the early stages. Even though we know these players and we know their capabilities, teams still have to get in a groove. Things still have to go well for teams to have success in the NFL. Like, for instance, in baseball, let me say this, Luch. In baseball, if a not-so-good team gets hot during a stretch, you know, sometimes they can sneak in, and if they stay hot, they can make a little run in the playoffs. In the NFL, that's not going to happen. If a team's bad, eventually they're going to fall out of contention, and the good teams are typically going to rise to the top as the season normalizes. And so it's still early in the season, and I think we see some teams – that, you know, lost week one, came back and fought hard and squeezed out some wins. And I think we saw some teams that won week one come back and not be as good as I think we expect. I almost feel like we need to keep this. We're going to make this a Tennessee Titans home show. I think we might need to start there this week because we were both, I think, a lot higher on Tennessee in this spot than probably most in the industry.
I want to start there, and then I want to talk about Seattle for multiple reasons. So I think this is a good elephant in the room spot here. If you tuned into Crunch Time on Sunday afternoon, Chief and I were on with our guy Keith Eyster, and we spent some time on that Chargers-Titans game, and we kind of nailed it. I mean, it didn't hit the ceiling that maybe we thought it would for some of the guys, but I mean, I was on the show, and I straight up said, hey, one of my bills is going to be a Chargers double stack, and I'm running it back with Derrick Henry, and I played the $100 single entry. I finished 95th out of 5,600. You know, made 3X on my entry, which is fine. Finished with 177 DK points, which is awesome. So I just went into our results database and looked at the Millie winner build. Same build. It had Herbert, Keenan, Mike Williams, ran it back with Derrick Henry. I had those same exact pieces. And, you know, shout out to Millie winner, 180 degrees Miami, had that build. He had Rashad White, who was one of our expert conviction plays in lineup HQ. And I had Debo Samuel. Zach Ertz, Kyren Williams with the late Cam Akers news, and the Tampa Bay defense. So it wasn't too far-fetched of a wacky Milly lineup, and I'm glad we kind of were pretty close to nailing that game theory we had going on there. So talk to me a little bit more about that game.
Yeah, I think one of the things I saw in that game, believe it or not, Luch, is and I want to talk about this because I think it's important. The Titans passing attack is not dead, right? Here's why I'm bringing this up, Luch. Yes, we had 25 carries for Derrick Henry for 80 yards. And yeah, Derrick, he didn't eclipse 100. He wasn't maybe as efficient as we wanted. But the fact still remains Derrick Henry is the workhorse of this team. If you can get both facets of the rushing attack and the passing game going from a Tennessee perspective, they're going to be a very hard team to beat. Now, one of the things I do want to say is this. When we look at the Titans, D-Hop only had 4 for 40. So we kind of had some massive distribution in this game. Like Traylon had 3 for 76. Chris Moore had that one big catch. But D-Hop 4 for 40. Chig Okonkwo, which we talked about, 4 for 35. You know, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina 3 for 25. Derrick Henry picking up right where he left off last year, which I think is going to be good for fantasy owners down the stretch. Last year, we saw Derrick Henry get involved a little bit more in the passing game. And I don't want to overlook that. If Derrick Henry is catching 3 passes a game, 2 to 3, or getting enough target volume, eventually he's going to have some monster games because he's one of these guys that can take a screen 60, 70 yards to the house because of the speed, the athleticism, the power. And this is just like handing it off to him with the head of steam going downhill. So I'm bringing that up because the Titans, I think, if they stay healthy, are set up for really good complementary football if Ryan Tannehill can go 20 for 24 for 246. And that's really where I'm headed. This is very efficient passing from Tannehill, 20 for 24, 246 and a touchdown. If this is the Ryan Tannehill the Titans get in shootouts, they're going to be fine.
It wasn't as pretty as the box score is going to show you. But you saw the glimpses of the play action game. I mean,
no turnovers, though. That's really what I'm driving. 20 for 24, 246, no INTs.
You know,
we can live with that.
He took 5 sacks, and, you know, you're thinking, throw the damn ball, et cetera. But would you rather him force the throws that we saw in week 1, which cost them the game against New Orleans, or would you rather, you know, rather have a drive-ending sack and punt the ball away and have a formidable defense out there to try to do their thing against the offense? So,
yeah,
I'm with you. But he's a play-action quarterback. He can get the job done once in a while when he steps back, you know, straight drop and throw. But it's kind of ugly when they're forced to do that, but you know, they really do have to establish it or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. So you honor that play action game and a gritty team. The Titans are a gritty team, 2-0 as dogs against the spread so far this season. Obviously they covered both games and won outright in game 2. And that's, you know, the Josh Kelly chalk. We both said, hey, don't do it against his defense. And that was a really good move. So for once, we're going to do a minor victory lap. We, you know, called that game pretty well. And then Keenan Allen had a game. And, you know, when you throw the ball a bajillion times, volume and opportunity kind of, you know, takes precedent over anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. So I definitely think if people caught crunch time, you know, they got a chance to get the food for thought crew to give them some ideas late on a Sunday. And I'm glad it worked out. I want to go back to another game that we talked about. And while this game didn't end in the fashion that we thought, it kind of did. Luce, were you on food for thought when I talked about the fact that I thought the Colts-Texans game could be good for fantasy goodness if we stayed there? And lo and behold, it was. Now, what ended up happening was Anthony Richardson gets hurt early. But if you played the passing game like we talked about, Stroud went for 384 and 2. Nico Collins, 7 for 146 yards. Michael Pittman, 8 catches for 56 yards. Zach Moss, 18 for 88 and 1, 4 catches for 19 yards. Robert Woods, 6 for 74. Tank Dell, 7 for 72. Like, if you followed that game plan, here's the thing. Young quarterbacks on bad teams facing each other typically does yield fantasy goodness. They can't stop you. It's typically a good spot for them to get right. Whereas my quarterback, Bryce Young, is going to be facing good defense. Almost everybody in the division has a good defense at this point. So my point is, to me, this was a good game to kind of measure these young quarterbacks. And then my elephant in the room here is poor Colts. Anthony Richardson was starting to roll in that game and goes out with a concussion. And they had to end up just, you know, using Gardner Minshew, who's very serviceable, a veteran now, is definitely going to keep this team afloat. But Anthony Richardson was kind of showing why the Colts drafted him over a guy like Will Levis. Like, Anthony Richardson looks to be ready to be a professional quarterback. You know what I'm saying? And so hopefully he has a speedy recovery. And that's kind of my elephant in the room. The Colts are hoping Richardson gets back because they don't want him out for this season. They want him to take the lumps, right? Take all the lumps this season, get all the bad stuff out of the way, and come back next season and be ready to go.
It was really nice to see Michael Pittman get a healthy target share early in the season. I thought we would have seen that with Matt Ryan, and people were drafting him at like the fourth round turn last year and season long in best ball and stuff like that. And we're seeing Kylan Granson do things, like, you know, some guys coming out of the woodwork to be formidable here. We'll see what happens when Jonathan Taylor comes back. On the flip side of that game, I know he's getting a lot of volume, but first of all, kudos to CJ Stroud for the way he's playing with an offensive line that's missing a couple of starters already within his first 2 weeks. And Nico Collins, the chemistry that those two have. I mean, Nico Collins has been unbelievable. Really cool to see him get a healthy share of targets and finally come into his own as a pro. So, like what I'm seeing there, we saw some Tank Dell in week two. So,
yeah,
you know, you got your Bobby Woods there and things like that. But I think as the season gets into week 13, week 14, they start phasing out the vets a little more when they're not competitive and get the young guys some more reps. So, you know, the Texans might not, you know, have a winning record, but they're fun, at least. They're, you know, and so are the Colts. So this division, certainly interesting. And, you know, I think I want to talk Jaguars, Chiefs in a moment before we start kind of previewing next week and tie some of these things in. But I want to talk about Seattle and Detroit. What a game. And I obviously missed last week's show. I was away on a little vacation. It was my girlfriend's 30th birthday. We were in Colorado. So I have some good food and some story time to talk about at the end. But, you know, I know the margin for error in you know, sports betting and DFS is minuscule, and I've been on the right side of some big wins. I've been on the wrong side. I've been on the wrong side of plenty of them. But I had a 12 team parlay in week one. I hit 11 legs, and Seattle money line against the Rams is what buried me, and that one hurt. That would have been a nice 29K W in the pocket. So that was one I thought I had after the first half of that Seattle Rams game, and then LA just crammed Seattle in the second half. And then, you know, week two, speculation here, and Detroit coming off a big win in week one. And speculation is that, well, you know, Seattle's line is really banged up. Geno's going to be running for his life. The Seahawks also had a little bit of an injury scare with DK Metcalf early in that game. But, you know, before you know it, I mean, we have a straight up shootout and a just a thriller, a game that went to overtime. It kind of had the same exact outcome as last week's matchup when these two teams popped off. It was just an absolute shootout. And I want to give kudos to Seattle. They didn't help me whatsoever in week one, but, you know, they battled through and through this game against Detroit, and Geno had a killer game, 328 yards, 2 touchdowns. They didn't get the ground game going, but you saw Tyler Lockett and Metcalf complement each other extremely well. And what Geno Smith did, you know, he hit a ton of receivers. JSN had 6 targets, didn't have anything really to show for it, 34 yards. But Geno spread the ball around to 9 different receivers in that game. So I think that's huge. And he was taking what Detroit, you know, gave him. And I'm just, you know, not sure exactly what to take away from the Detroit Lions. You know, big win on paper against Kansas City in week 1. That was a game which I think Kansas City should have won. There were some horrendous drops in that game. You know, the Lions, a win's a win. We talked about that briefly. And then they come to a home game with all the momentum in the world and just lose to a Seattle team that got schlacked by the Rams. So I think the Lions kind of are who I thought they were. They are a good football team that can get hot and have a high ceiling, but I think it's going to take some volatility. They have some things to clean up. Plus, David Montgomery is super banged up right now, so there's going to be a lot of pressure on Jahmyr Gibbs. And so that kind of, you know, the Lions kind of are who I thought they were. I wasn't ready to claim them NFC champs after beating the Chiefs. Kansas City, you know, tying that into Kansas City. Travis Kelce comes back. Everything's going to be fixed. Chris Jones is signed. He's on the field. Everything is going to be fixed, right? Well, I don't know if they were partying a little bit too much for Patrick Mahomes' birthday over the weekend or what happened, but that was a dogfight, a grueling game, which many people across the industry pegged to be a shootout and DFS friendly and whatever you call it. You know, Travis Etienne didn't do squat. Calvin Ridley, awful. The one hit in that game was Christian Kirk, and a lot of people were saying, you know, Christian Kirk is the man beater, you know, great in man coverage, blah, blah, blah. He had a great game. Zay Jones did go down as well, so I'm sure that helped his production too. But in terms of you know, DFS and taking the overs and things like that, it was a total dud. In terms of competitive football, it was sloppy. It was ugly. It was a good, ugly football game, just not what I expected whatsoever. So give me your takes. You know, Detroit and Seattle here, are the Lions kind of where you thought they would be? And then, like, tie that into what happened in that Kansas City-Jacksonville game for me, Chief.
Well, I do want to talk about this Seattle Lions game because I think – so I watched that game. Well, I take that back, Mooch. I was watching Red Zone. And so a lot of that game kept cycling through, obviously, because it was one of the hotter games, I think, this week. Here's what I will say about that game in general. The Lions – if you watch that game, and I did watch a good deal of – the Lions had that game under control. Jared Goff throws a pick six, and that totally changes that game. The pick six is what happened in terms of how that game flipped. And then so then Jared Goff had to play behind the sticks. They were down 2 scores. Jared Goff, they got to stop. Jared Goff scores a touchdown. They get a stop. They get the field goal. They go to overtime. And they just couldn't stop Seattle in overtime. I still think Detroit was the better team that day. The pick six bailed out the Seattle Seahawks in a general sense. And so I don't want to downplay Seattle being too hanging in this game. They scored 37 points. So that wasn't all the pick six, but the pick six did get them in back into the game. I still think the Lions have a lot of football games that they can win. And so I do think for them, I don't want to overreact. What I do think, though, is that Seattle – came out to play football after just looking awful in week 1. In terms of the Chiefs-Jaguars, the Chiefs did not look good, even with Kelce back, but they were on the road. And when you are, you know, a championship team, you find ways to win. The Jaguars aren't ready, in my opinion, after week 2. They got to find a way to take the next step, right? Like, they struggled with the Colts. And then Kansas City came to town, they were at home, and they struggled again. And so I think what we need to see from the Jaguars are they actually ready to take the next step and become a contender? Once again, as we talked about, I've already picked Tennessee to win this division. I think they have too much experience to, in the end, fall to the Jaguars this season. Tannehill's got experience. Henry's got experience. The defense has experience. DeAndre Hopkins, you know, even if you want to include his lack of playoffs, he's still got tons of experience. Like, this isn't a guy that's, you know, been in the league 2 seasons. He's been in the league 10 plus years now. Like, he's going to be fine, right? And so I want to see if the Jaguars are ready to actually take a leap, and they're going to have to beat some top tier teams to do it. We can't scrape by Indianapolis and then don't beat the Chiefs at home if you're ready to take that next step.
I have a couple more games. I think we can, like, there's three of them that are sticking out to me that I feel like we should talk about, and maybe we can tie some other things in. And by the way, we're recording on Monday, folks. So, you know, not like week one, we don't have a wealth of information in front of us. Let me go to more of a simpler one first. Tampa Bay is 2-0. Chicago's 0-2. Baker Mayfield's doing his thing with some weapons here, man. And Justin Fields, it's not looking good early. There's some disconnect. What in the world is happening? And Tampa Bay 27, Chicago 17. What are your macro thoughts on that one, buddy?
I got to give it to Baker Mayfield. I think that's the bottom line. Like, Baker Mayfield has come in. He's done his job, right? So first of all, Baker Mayfield had to earn this job. They didn't hand him this job in Tampa Bay, for what it's worth. You get what I'm saying? Like, this isn't – they didn't give him the job because he had more experience than Kyle Trask. They gave him the job because he earned it. And so this is probably, Luch, the best offensive coordinator he's ever had, really. I'm pretty sure it's the best offensive coordinator he's had. It's probably not close. Like, yeah, Freddie Kitchens was his coordinator, and they gave him the job because he did such a good job. But Baker's had a lot of turbulence in his career. I am not a Baker Mayfield fan, but I have tons of respect for what he's been able to do. And we're not seeing him throw for 120. He threw for 300 yards last week. Yes, Mike Evans had to make some big plays, but he put him on the money. Like, he did. And so I'm not a Baker Mayfield fan, but I'm happy that it seems like he settled into a role. Tampa Bay's 2-0. And the Atlanta Falcons are 2-0. We're going to see what happens with the Saints here tonight, whether or not they're 2-0. But bottom line, this is interesting. Tampa Bay coming out this way makes them very interesting. Their offense can score points with Baker Mayfield. They've got a shot at this division if they keep winning games. And so I think it's going to be very interesting for Tampa Bay. As you talked about, he's got real weapons. And this is something, after 2 weeks, this is definitely something to behold. I've got another team that, even though they've lost the game, it's a team I talked about last week that I think is still surprising everyone, but we'll get to that, I guess. You're muted.
I said, let's go there unless you want to save it.
Yeah, let's go there. I talked about this team last week. This was my, let's call it, surprise team of the week. I really talked about them a lot, and I thought it was important because of all the coach speak and all the player speak and everything we heard coming out of camp, everything we thought was going to happen with this team. The Rams are going to be a problem, at least after 2 weeks. Week one, they beat Seattle. No. Was it Seattle?
It was week one.
Yeah. Week one, they beat Seattle.
That was my parlay, the kill me parlay pick.
Week two,
week one.
They lose to the 49ers 30-23. Not 30-12. Now, they did kick a field goal at the end. It was 30-20. But still, even if it would have been 30-20, lose for a team that was supposed to be one of the worst teams in football coming into this season, to be putting up this kind of production, and they now have Cooper Kupp 2.0 and Mr. Nacua. When Cooper Kupp comes back, are both of these guys just going to get all the targets? Like, how's that going to work? But having those two weapons, along with Tutu Atwell being ingratiated to the offense as well, Matt Stafford seems to be playing fine. Once again, he didn't put up the same gaudy numbers from the first week in terms of the turnovers, but he still threw for over 300 against the San Francisco 49ers. 307. Here's what's going to happen. If people keep sleeping on the Saints, they're gonna mess around and catch the Saints in the playoffs, and it's going to get ugly. And so I think the Saints are probably, in my opinion, the surprise team in football. And if they keep heading down this path, even though everybody regards Sean McVay as a good coach, if he gets this team to the playoffs, he might need to win Coach of the Year. Quite serious, I'm being honest here. He may need to win Coach of the Year. If he gets this team, which everybody probably labeled a bunch of misfits, to the playoffs, it's going to be an incredible season if they do this.
Puka leads the NFL in target share.
Yeah, now that won't continue. That won't continue. But for right now, he's Cooper Kupp, isn't he? He is Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp comes back. It could continue, but like we'll see what happens if and when. I'm not even sure I'm not sold that Cooper Kupp's going to come back sooner than later. I don't know. I can't see that being a rush. I think they're trying to be a little more people pleasy and tell the public what they want to hear. I wouldn't be shocked if he missed a little more time. But
yeah,
the other side of that game with the Niners, just a couple of fantasy notes. Deebo Samuel could also be a league winner. He really could.
Yeah.
He, excluding Monday's games, because we're recording on Monday night, and there's some news maybe we could touch on, which we're trying not to live look in too much, but some craziness going on Monday. But Deebo is leading the league, excluding these Monday teams, in routes ran per team drop back to pass. People were worried about his role, you know, and he admitted in the offseason that he had a down year and he vowed to not perform that way. Well, they're making a point to keep him involved. It was Brandon Ayuk in week one. It was him in week two. McCaffrey was McCaffrey in both weeks. George Kittle's kind of like the one that's not producing out of the group. He's still seeing some targets, but don't get it twisted. Deebo Samuel could be a league winner. And he had an awesome week. He was in the Millie winning lineup on Sunday as well. So he... You know, he's running routes, and that's coinciding with his target share. He has a 30% target share right now. It's 16 targets. It's not like it's lighting the world on fire, because we know that offense, in a way, like Tennessee's, in a way, is like those targets are quality targets when they're there, typically, because you're getting some kind of schematics or, you know, play action involved or some separation. So Deebo is an instrumental part of the 49ers. And if anybody's selling him for some reason, I would go to buy Deebo, I think, in that game for sure.
Yeah, love that call.
There's a couple other games I want to get to, and I'm sure we could tie them together looking forward. Speaking of San Fran and looking ahead to Thursday, I mean, Chief, we have to talk about the Giants and whatever happened. And like most of the public were writing them off when they were in a 20-0 hold of the Cardinals, because they looked so bad and the Giants looked so bad in week one. And I don't know. I mean, it's speculative on my part, but the lack of preseason reps, although Daniel Jones saw some decent ones compared to most veteran quarterbacks, but the lack of continuity in preseason reps, I think, is showing. And I'm thinking maybe it just took them a while to get going. You can make the same argument for the Titans. Ryan Tannehill took 3 preseason reps in the same game on the same drive, and all he did was hand the ball off 3 times, and that was his preseason. What happens? He shows up against New Orleans. Looks like he's never played football before. Everyone's calling him washed. Now, obviously, he's, you know, 13, 14 years older than Daniel Jones or something like that, so I don't know what the real problem is, but maybe things finally just came together. I mean, as terrible as that first half was against Arizona, like, mega credit to that coaching staff in New York and the players for not tucking their tail between their legs. They all know the statistics that if you're 0-2, how unlikely it is to make the playoffs and all that stuff. They know that. They hear the noise. It doesn't matter if they say they tune it out. They hear the noise. So what do they win? A short week battle to travel across the country to go play San Francisco and their 10.5-point dog. So what do you make of the Giants? And do you give them any kind of Hail Mary shot traveling across the country against San Francisco?
No.
And Saquon Barkley sprained his ankle.
But not a chance. Not a chance against San Francisco. Here's the thing with the Giants, man. The Giants, in a sense, were going to be behind the eight ball no matter what this season. Lose. They played the Cowboys week one. They played the Cardinals week two. They might beat the Seahawks because they'll be at home. It's possible, but lose. Cowboys, Cardinals, 49ers, Seahawks, Dolphins, Bills. They just had a tough stretch to open up the season, and they still got to play the Eagles twice. They still got to play the Cowboys again. They still got to play Washington. And Washington's 2-0. And I just, I'm very afraid for the Giants' playoff chances, and we're just in the second week. Because I don't think they beat the Eagles at all. I don't think they beat the Cowboys. And I think they probably split with Washington.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I give Washington a chance to beat the Eagles at least once. A chance. But I, you know what I'm saying? It's like, what? Where are these games going to come up for them to win? I just don't see it. Like, by the time they play the Jets may have a new quarterback. That, you know? So I'm just very afraid for this team. I don't think they're better than the Saints. I don't know if they're better than the Rams. I don't know. And they play the Eagles twice in 3 weeks. And as long as the Eagles are healthy, I'm not picking them to beat the Eagles in either of these games. And I know that's closer to the end of the season. Injuries can happen. I get all that. But generally speaking, as much as the Giants dug themselves up out of an early grave, the grave was there when the schedule came out this season.
Can we... And hopefully a speedy recovery if you're Saquon, by the way. Matt Breida, you know, waiver wire looks this week for a couple weeks if you're desperate. Eric Gray, rookie, got some best ball buzz. If you're going super deep, we'll see if he can carve a role. Anyway, I think my last elephant in the room look here, because that'll put us on a nice pace for looking ahead, is Washington and Denver. Maybe we could tie these together. Week one, okay, things happen. I don't want to go back and look at Tennessee and New Orleans again, but I will. 1-point game, both defenses are good. Ryan Tannehill threw, you know, three picks. And you lose the game. You turn the ball over 3-plus times, you're going to lose the game in the NFL, most likely. Week two, okay, you see some regression. You see some things, you know, correct themselves. These guys are having some real snaps under their belts. Okay, Denver, home game, week one. Huge historic rivalry against the Raiders. You look like crap. You lose by a point. It still feels like Nathaniel Hackett never left. You know, all this stuff about Sean Payton coming in. All the weapons, Javonte Williams healthy. Oh, P. Ryan, change of pace back. You know, Jerry Jeudy, you know, he's going to play. In week two, he played a little bit. That's fine. Cortland Sutton, good kid. Marvin Mims was barely used week one. Had a baller week two, though. And then, you know, Dolchich gets hurt. Whatever. I don't care about the offense. The offense is a problem right now. I don't know what the problem is, but it's a problem. Like, the whole thing's a problem. I can't even pinpoint one thing because just the entire thing is hot garbage right now. But the defense, that is the should be the bread and butter of this team. And you got Pat Surtain on the outside, you know, and some underrated guys in that front seven, and they've been horrible. Like, I think the most overrated either defensive or offensive unit right now in football, right now through 2 weeks, is the Broncos. I mean, like, how do you let that game get into the 30s at home against Washington? And I'm taking nothing away from Washington. I love Sam Howell. Check my best ball shares. I have too much of them. John Dotson guy here, Nazareth product, Pennsylvania guy. McLaurin, you know, played well. Like, no, you don't let that game get into the 30s at home against Washington. That team, as exciting as they might be, I don't think they're ready either. But kudos to the staff, right? Eric Bieniemy is there. Awesome. Good things are happening. You don't let that happen. That, to me, is arguably the Broncos again. Just, I was so wrong about them last year, and just on their way to just mega disappointing plenty of people again in 2023.
Let me at least say this. If they don't win enough games, that's one thing. What we can say is, this team can score. Last year, they couldn't score any points. So, for all intents and purposes, Sean Payton has done his job early, and that's been that he made this team competitive on the offensive end. Now, can the defense catch up, and can they not have some of the fluky mistakes? You get what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to overlook this. They scored 33 points.
I know.
Last year, the Broncos were scoring like 13 points. So things are going right. I saw Russ hit some throws that last season would have been, you know, he would have thrown it into the Rockies ballpark. But he's out there dropping dimes. I actually think this team's going to be fine. I just don't think they win the division.
Well, you might not make the wild card. You're 0-2. You know what the numbers are. It's going to be tough. It's going to be real tough sledding.
Well, their division is tough. The problem is everybody in their division has lost a game now. The Raiders have lost. The Chiefs have lost. The Chargers have lost. So it's not like they're completely out of it. They got a shot to go on a run. Like, they got a shot. You know what I mean? And so that's kind of where I am with Denver. While they're 0-2, everybody else is 1-1. The problem is they get the Dolphins this week. I don't think they win that game. They're 0-3. They get the Bears. They should beat the Bears. The Jets come to town.
But they should have beat Washington and LA.
I understand.
But they're not dead. They're not dead.
Listen, right. I'm saying they got a shot. And then they go to the Chiefs. Honestly, I would say their offense is better than the Chiefs' offense right now. It's whether or not their defense can hold up. They can outscore Kansas City if it comes to it.
And how
today,
maddening.
I'm saying today.
How maddening is that as a Denver fan, if you know those out there listening, that you know last year was the offense. The defense was fine. Now it's what's happening here? All facets of the game together.
Wasn't Denver up like 21-0 in this game or 21-7? They were up big time. And then Washington just comes storming back. So, you know, it's one of those things, man.
It's going to be tough. And I like those players. I like the Broncos. I was just in Colorado. And here I am bashing them. But, you know, even if you're a Denver supporter, you got to agree. It's been a super disappointing, you know, first 2 weeks of the season. And, you know, you can't be thrilled about seeing Miami, and maybe this is a good transition because we can talk about that Monday night game and then go into that Miami Broncos game. You know, I mean, what a ridiculous way the game ended, by the way, with the lateral back to the lineman. And then,
man, that game should have continued. I'm like, man, come on. You just basically pulled it away from the Patriots and they're surging. They're trying to send this thing to OT. Just crazy.
See, I was kind of shocked that I kind of thought it was the right call, but I was shocked that they overturned it at Gillette. Right.
Right.
how do you overturn that? You know, and the fact that it was at Gillette was just kind of a little more, you know, jaw dropping in that sense. But, you know, the Patriots, you know, clawed back. They didn't let Tyreek beat him. Tua looked great in the first half. Second half, eh. I'm surprised they got the run game going. You know, Tua just has these flashes of, like, he just does top five QB upside stuff now once in a while, like, more often than not. Like, he's really evolved. He has this finesse game in him now. His pocket awareness is so much better, and I'm thinking that comes a little hand-in-hand with confidence, right, with the whole injury thing, he's putting on weight. But, like, some of those finesse balls he's throwing, I'm really impressed with Tua. I can't say enough nice things. Of course, he has weapons. We know that, and a good head coach, but he doesn't look uncomfortable anymore is what I want to say.
Let me say this about the Dolphins. So the Dolphins are at the place now where I don't want to see them the first 8 to 9 games of the season. I don't care. What I want to see is, can they finish a season now? They did not finish well last year, for what it's worth. They got into midseason, and then it's kind of like this offense stalled out for a while. And I want to be accurate. Tua was dealing with some injuries. Like, it was some weird things happening last season for Tua and this team. And so, you know, Teddy Bridgewater had to come in and try to save the day. And Tua comes back, and Tua hits his head again. And they had some weird things happen. You know, Tua had that situation where he hits his head, and he's on the ground, and he's frozen, and everybody's saying, well, he should have been out. Like, he shouldn't even been playing anymore. So I get it, right? So what I want to see, though, this team started out hot last season. Can we get to the middle of the season and good things still happen? That's what we want to figure out. That's what we want to figure out.
If you want to figure it out in person, you want to buy some tickets, Ticketmaster is the place to be. Ticketmaster's got you covered. They're the official marketplace of the NFL. Ticketmaster gives you more ways to find your perfect seat. Interactive seat map gives you 360-degree previews of your section to make sure you got the best view of all those big plays. If your plans change, Ticketmaster gives you flexibility to sell or transfer your tickets, plus mobile tickets make getting in on game day a breeze. You can even customize your Ticketmaster app to rep your favorite team's colors. Find tickets today at Ticketmaster.com/NFL. And with that being said, Denver and Miami got some big names in that game. Loaded main slate. I'm just all we have is player pricing right now as we're recording. If I am thinking, if my conviction, I'm just speaking hypothetically, if my conviction is that this Denver defense is a little overrated, thinking it'll probably get some decent ownership on Tua at 7K and Tyreek against the Broncos if that's what I opt to do. I just I feel like maybe I'm reaching a little bit. It's early in the week. I didn't get to look at a lot. But I can't see a lot of people having that conviction and playing that angle. That's an interesting look, I think, in my opinion. And if you think Denver can score, I mean, then you got a run back of your choosing with one of those wide receivers. I think right off the bat, and I'm just kind of, we talked about Denver and Miami. That's a really interesting tournament game, I think, Chief.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you 100%. I expect Denver to be able to put up some points. Like, the Patriots moved the ball fairly okay. And, I mean, we saw that, you know, the Chargers were able to move the ball fairly okay as well. Denver should be able to move the ball. I'm not expecting them to win this game for what it's worth. But they should be able to move the ball. So, I think from a tournament perspective, this is definitely a game that we could lock into. I'm going to go ahead and say that Tua probably goes for at least 250 again. You know, with the speedsters he's got and all these weapons. I mean, he's got River Craycraft rolling. He's got Durham Smythe rolling. Seriously, he's spraying the ball around the field, and Tariq and Waddle are still leading the charge. Raheem Mostert played well against the Patriots, you know, and he's showing a lot of burst right now. I like this game. I like this stat on both sides. And so I think they're going to be just fine. So yeah, that's definitely a tournament target game. I've got another game, and this slate really isn't elite, but I do think this may end up being the game of the week again, and it's the Chargers Vikings. We've seen Kirk Cousins just put up monster numbers already this season. Like, he's just pushing the ball down the field. And if the Chargers are going to keep up, Herbert's going to have to push the ball down the field. I think outside of Broncos, Dolphins, this is the next game that is most likely to shoot out, in my opinion. In terms of both sides, just both teams being able to pile up points.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the public game. And like, rightfully yeah. so. Rightfully
yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah. Chargers, Vikings, I mean, geez.
That's the play. And both teams are extremely desperate. 0-2, 0-2. Who would have thought yeah. that? Right? And you think about Minnesota in this spot, extra couple of days to prepare as well. So I think that's yeah. critical. Yeah, I think that's the game. And I obviously you can make a case for all the plays, but Alexander Mattison's been so underwhelming that there's a low owned play in that game, I think. Everyone's gonna want to play Jefferson. Hockenson, 2-touchdown game last week. Jordan Addison's been incredible. No one's going to play Alexander Mattison. And what do we know dating back to last year? You can run on the Chargers. I mean, Derrick Henry was all right. Tajay Spears changed his pace, changed your pace back last week.
Tajay had about 40 yards rushing, didn't he? Tajay had almost 40 yards rushing, didn't he?
Yeah. So the combined.
Yeah, I mean, you combine that. Yeah, that's really good.
So I think Madison's a tournament play, but you can go with any of those pass catchers. That's going to be the game everyone talks about all week, which really – you know, puts a team, a potent offense like Miami in so, even more of an interesting spot. It's just so yeah. hard to click Tyreek at 9K against Denver opposed to Jefferson 9,100 against the Chargers. It's just so hard to yeah. want to do that. And the pricing is a big thing too.
Here's something else I think is going to be interesting for this week, Luch, because a lot of times we think about games where it's going to be a shootout and back and forth. But what about some of these spots where it should be an onslaught? For instance, you know, when I look over the landscape of the league right now, it feels like the 49ers on Thursday should be an onslaught. And so for those of you that are into Thursday, Sunday slates, like some of us used to be, like the 49ers could very well just put a throttling on the Giants. And while the Thursday games are typically a little bit higher owned anyway, that's still a good way to get exposure to an offense that should be rolling. Like the Thursday through Sunday slate this week, I actually think is fairly good because you can get Debo and Brandon Ayuk where otherwise we wouldn't have them on a main slate. And either one of these guys, including Christian McCaffrey, could just go nuts in this spot. Like, have we not seen the Giants just be demolished? I mean, the Arizona Cardinals were running up the score. They made Hollywood Brown look like a superstar. They made Zach Ertz look like a superstar early. They made Joshua Dobbs look like a superstar early. And now I'm saying early in the game. Now we have really an actual competent team that's going to – and they're in the Giants on the road. This could be an upside McCaffrey game. This could be an upside Debo game. This could be an upside Ayuk game. And I don't want to overlook that because we're afraid that people are going to put too much emphasis on the Thursday game to get the Thursday through Sunday. I'm not saying we got to load up and play this whole offense, but I think if I'm playing the Thursday through Sunday slate, what I'm doing is I'm perhaps splitting up all three of these main pieces in McCaffrey, Ayuk, and Debo. And I'm making a rule and I say I want at least one of these guys in every build and go from there. So I really like this 49ers offense because they could very well, if they go up 21-0, the Giants aren't coming back. You rest assured the Giants aren't coming back on this team.
That'll make a really interesting, you know, showdown discussion on Thursday. How you separate that game. That's gonna be awesome. Looking at the main slate and talking about how that game's gonna be public, just from a DFS perspective. Do you think people like? Do you think Mahomes Kelce is still going to carry as much ownership as they normally would, coming off a pretty poor week? Because they got Chicago this week. You want to talk about what should be an onslaught? If too many people are going to gravitate towards the Minnesota game, which you know maybe leaves Kelce and Mahomes a little under owned, like that's where I want to go. That's exactly
right.
That's the get right spot of 2023. You got the Bears.
Yeah, the Bears. And that's what I'm saying. Like. This is another onslaught spot, like for Sunday. where the Chiefs, where they may have had a lack of scoring against the Jags, they're at home. They better be able to put up numbers against the Bears. If they struggle with the Bears, I'm going to get very concerned. I'm going to be elitely concerned. But the Chiefs here, this should be an onslaught spot for them. And really, this is one of those spots where Patrick Mahomes goes out, throws for 350. As an example, you know, Kelce, I think, is probably still a little hurt. But, you know, he has 7 or 8 catches for 50, 60 yards, maybe a touchdown. And one of these guys we actually saw that the Chiefs wide receivers can catch the ball. Maybe they just had a rough time on that week one. Sky Moore, you know, had some catches. The gadget, their gadget player had some catches. So I like this spot as an onslaught for the Chiefs.
Yeah, and I think just from a DFS perspective, I'm curious to see how the ownership projections shake out. Really hoping we see Anthony Richardson, who was off to another baller start and then got concussed. But that Colts-Baltimore game, even with Minshew, could have some sneaky points. We know the Colts secondary is susceptible, and Baltimore is super banged up, as they always are in the secondary, it seems like. So I think sneaky tournament appeal could be Colts-Ravens.
Yeah. I don't hate that. I've got another spot that I like a little bit more than that one for an onslaught, but I get it. I still expect the Ravens to win this game, though, for what it's worth. Like, they're leading this division. They're 2-0. I don't see them. They're going to try to keep their foot on the gas right now. The more games they can win early, you know, the better they're going to be. So I like this spot.
You know what was interesting about Buffalo? And they got Washington. So, I mean, we're going to see some points there. I think I said it on Crunch Time. And so, like, Buffalo's projected team total was just north of 27. And last year when Buffalo scored 30-plus points, Gabe Davis scored a touchdown in 4 of those 7 games. Well, guess what? They hung 30 on Las Vegas, and he scored again last week. So that's 5 of 8 games. So if you think Buffalo hits 30, maybe it's a Gabe Davis week. Like, I don't know. It's just a funny trend. I don't know what it means, but you got to think about that game a little bit too. See, a lot of these games are game stackable, and I don't always feel that way. And I don't always force game stacks with my quarterback, as in, like, you know, quarterback receiver and then bring it back with someone. But you can totally game stack the crap out of that game. You could totally game stack the Baltimore Colts game. Obviously, the public Chargers Minnesota game. Miami and Denver we talked about. The Chiefs, I mean, you can run it back with DJ Moore. Like, I mean, duh, like, why not? So,
yeah,
these are all very game stackable, I think, this week.
Yeah, here's my last onslaught team that I want to talk about. And this is a team we just talked about. They struggled this week. Didn't really pull up many points. But the Jaguars are still better than the Texans. They're at home again. This has got to be a spot where Calvin really comes back out. Trevor Lawrence comes back out. And these guys just try to put it together and have a nice quality outing and don't struggle. You get what I'm saying? Like, we saw them put up points against the Colts, which, you know, have a young quarterback. We should see them put up points against the Texans. And if that happens, I think this could be another tournament spot. You know, Calvin really had a dud last week. Are people going to be interested? Maybe, maybe not. So we shall see. But I think this is a good spot for the Jags to come out 2-1 and continue to try to, you know, push forward throughout this season. Nice onslaught spot for them.
Yeah, and, you know, the Colts were missing bull starting. I mean, excuse me, the Texans were missing both starting safeties. That's a big blow. And, you know, D'Amico Ryan's the defensive-minded coach. You can only do so much with what you have on the football field. So the players still got to execute. So I think that's interesting. I'm just looking at some spreads and totals, and we can kind of wind down there. Listen, and we'll tie in some news with the Monday night game because, of course, we're recording on Monday night. But I actually bet on Tennessee +4 earlier on Monday. And unfortunately for the game of football and everyone's health, it seems like they're going to be in a more favorable spot. I didn't see I don't have the TV on. I'm like, you know, what does LeBron say when he shuts off Twitter, you know, ghost 30 mode or whatever. Zero Dark Thirty mode. I'm in the zone here. But I'm getting messages and texts from friends and group chats saying that Nick Chubb had a pretty bad injury and he got carted off.
Yeah, he got carted off.
That's terrible for the game, man. Terrible for him. You know, he had that injury at Georgia too, and he's arguably the best running back in football. Very arguably, top three running back, top four running back. Like, damn, it's just killer. It's just brutal, brutal.
So yeah, it really sucks. It really sucks. And it sucks for Cleveland too, who really, I thought Cleveland had an outside shot at this division. I really did. If Nick Chubb's healthy, like, I mean, he had 10 carries for 64 yards and it's not even halftime yet. So I really felt like they had an outside shot at this division.
And that's kind of, breaking news as we had this recording going, but I hate to even like bring up the post roster effects and fantasy effects, but again, that's why we're here too. And they have Jerome Ford. They really liked him. There was a lot of training camp buzz. They looked at him more of a change of pace guy. He did have a hamstring injury in camp though. And I don't even know if he's 100%, but he's going to be probably the in-house candidate to take some shares. And they just signed someone like a week and a half ago, and I can't remember who it was off the top of my head. Was it from New England? Did they sign James Robinson? No, James Robinson's floating around. Anyway, there's a lot of still free agent running backs. Kareem Hunt, Leonard Fournette, who's going to find a home? Of course, if you're with us on Crunch Time, Cam Akers got yanked and deactivated on Sunday. Kyren Williams balled out, was in the Millie winning lineup. John Taylor, a couple weeks, who knows, off the pup list. There are services available, and I feel like Cleveland is probably going to pick up the phone and see who will give them the most team-friendly deal to unload one of those running backs. I couldn't imagine them just staying status quo. I don't know. Is there bad blood with Kareem Hunt after that ended? I mean, he knows the system. How much of a leg up does that, give him in this situation? But again, like Kareem Hunt, was allegedly going to sign with Indy weeks ago and apparently wanted more money, and clearly he hasn't gotten it. So I don't know where they're going to go. There's going to be some running back carousel. Just the bottom line is that really sucks, like you said. And, you feel for him as a human and, his family, friends, and the organization, because he's awesome to watch play football and he's a good dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more.
A lot of injuries and a lot of things changing and, geez, I mean, and just I'm thinking here out loud, the whole running backs don't matter, we're not going to pay them versus the running backs say we do matter. Well, they, just Barkley and Chubb, who were both in on that side of things and, both injured, and of course, like Barkley has a sprained ankle. I don't know. I'm right here saying neither of us know what Nick Chubb, I didn't watch the game. I don't know, but it sounds like it's significant, but. Like even just on that business side of discussion, almost is not helping the cause for running back saying we deserve money. Not that they can control when they get injured, just the sheer volume they take. Like they are more prone to get injured than most other players on the field, just because they're arguably taking the most hits from game to game. I mean, I don't know. Is that an interesting point? Would you agree with that for the most part?
I mean that's how it is. But I think because they're taking those hits, it's like we expect them to wear down faster. And here's how I think we should treat running backs, Luch. And I'm not saying this insensitively. I think we should give running backs more money on the front end. And then as guys like Zeke, as they get older, then let's start giving them more of the running back by committee. Now, that's not optimal, but it's more fair. What happens is running backs don't get paid nearly as much as the other positions, even early on, and teams are incentivized to keep them at the bottom of the totem pole on offense for salaries because of it. Like, if a running back doesn't get drafted in the top 10, like, forget it. They're not getting paid much money. I'm saying compared to everybody else. And then they're most likely to have a gruesome injury. And so teams want to not pay them because the shelf life is lower. They feel like they're gonna get the maximum potential out of a running back maybe in the first three seasons, right? like the running back position is probably one of the most utilized positions for younger players early on, even for quarterbacks sometime. Like, they don't mind drafting a quarterback in the top 10 and then letting him sit on the shelf behind a guy like Andy Dalton, as example. And I know Bryce Young's playing, but they'll happily bring in Andy Dalton and pay him, you know, $6 million a year and pay their rookie quarterback $15 million, $20 million, whatever, and let him sit there and learn because that he holds their future in their hands. Well, running back, they don't care. Running backs are a dime a dozen, so to speak. And so they pay them pennies on the dollar. And when they get hurt, that's it, which is why they want all these guarantees.
Regardless, you know, hopefully speedy recovery for Nick Chubb, whatever the diagnosis is. And yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. It's been a rough start. Rough start for nutrition and body parts in the NFL.
Yeah.
Should we cut to GPP food of the day and story time?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah, I got a couple good ones.
Say this. Last one before we pull the GPP food of the day. Last start. This is Monday night. It is going to be a showdown slate. But I'm actually very anxious. I actually want to watch this game, Luch, which is crazy. I'm really excited about Eagles Bucks. I want to see what the Bucks are made of on Monday night. If they come out and just hang with the Eagles win by a field goal late, then I'm really going to feel like the Bucks are for real. If they win this game, Luch, they're going to be thrust into the national spotlight. And are they going to be able to handle that with Baker Mayfield? I think this is a very crucial game for the Eagles and the Bucks. If the Bucks win this game, they're going to be in the top five in the NFL probably in terms of teams. Top five.
The defense is pretty good. And the Eagles, on the other side, have not put four quarters together. That's for sure. And they're banged up in the secondary.
Yeah.
By the way, the public got to see, finally, more of the A.J. Brown diva-ness come out. And that irked me. Obviously, he was a Titan. Fantastic football player. I still think he's a fantastic football player. I still think he's a little bit of a diva. He's a wide receiver. Of course he is. But that bothered me because he was so upset about not getting targets when the team was just dumping the football down Minnesota's throat. And it was working. And why do you think it didn't work in Tennessee? Because you have Derrick Henry. They won the AFC while A.J. Brown was on that roster. And he just got tired of blocking. It wasn't about him. He wasn't the guy in the spotlight. And he wasn't, you know, obviously got a little frustrated with that. Like, the Eagles were running away with it. Like, literally running the ball on the ground. What happens? They get in a confrontation on the sideline. And then Brown, it's still a competitive game. And Jalen Hurts goes out of his way to target him. Granted, one probably should have been a touchdown. Multiple times. And there's a flag in the play. It obviously didn't count. Instead of just sticking with the game plan. Like, how easily and how it just shocked me to see them give in that much with the play calling because one of your star players was unhappy, even though his team was winning the game comfortably. That blew my mind a little bit, Chief.
Yeah, really, absolutely. I get it. But he's probably the premier diva wide receiver right now in the league. And quite frankly, you know, he's going to have his games, right? He's going to have his game. But to me, if you are a number one receiver, you should probably have at least 8 targets a game in a National Football League.
Because Devonta Smith, I think they're 1A and 1A, man.
No. Very, very true. I don't disagree with that. But I'm saying if they're 1A and 1A, should most of the offensive production through the air go through them most games? Absolutely. I think that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
So yeah,
you're right. But you know, entering last week.
But to answer your question, is he a diva? Yes, sure. No disagreement there.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Seems like a cool dude. But I mean, come on, your team is winning. Like, there are bigger things than your targets and your receptions. Oh, maybe it won't hit your incentives. Whatever. You got a mega deal from the Eagles. Live with it. But entering last week, since week 2 of the 2022 season, including the playoffs, Devontae and AJ had the exact same number of targets. Like, what's going to make the guy happy? He better deliver. Like, if he's going to start, you know, kind of being a little loose like that and act like that in Philly, he better deliver or the fans will be much quicker to get on him a little more. So regardless, you know, great football player, great football team. Hopefully, yeah. If they lose to Tampa Bay, that media is going to have a lot to say, like you said, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're also going to have a lot to say about Tampa Bay because it won't be like Tampa Bay's 1-2. It will be a 3-0 Tampa Bay team, which is totally different in a national spotlight.
All right, so GPP food of the day / story time. I'll throw these together. I was in a couple different parts of Colorado with Taylor. Happy birthday, Taylor. Belated birthday. And I had In-N-Out Burger for the first time. And my reaction is much better than like the McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's kind of peers in that tier. And probably better than the burger joints that are a slight step up. Didn't blow me away, but it was really good. And shout out to Grant Niefer. Hung out with Grant in Colorado Springs a little bit, watched some of the games. He told me exactly what I should order at In-N-Out Burger. So that was good. I had to try it once. Coffee joint I don't have here on the East Coast called Dutch Brothers Coffee was unreal for like chain coffee. Blows Dunkin' and Starbucks out of the water. This is my chain here. I'm a big Wawa guy in Northeastern PA. And if you're from PA, the Wawa versus Sheetz battle is a big one. There we go. My background is blowing it up. But so that was cool, Dutch Brothers Coffee. And then I think Taylor and I both ate probably arguably some of the best restaurant food we ever had at a place called Earl's Kitchen in Denver. Okay. Totally went there on a limb. She had a filet. I had Cajun blackened chicken and ribs. And I rarely get chicken when I go out to somewhere good. And it was unbelievable. Like Earl's Kitchen, I think it's kind of like a minor chain. There's a couple locations. I think there's one in Florida. But if you're ever in Denver, that place was unbelievable. I was surprised. It's not often I leave a restaurant and I'm like, yo, that was top five food maybe I've eaten out. I don't get to say that quite often, but Earl's Kitchen was awesome. Plus, really good hospitality there. When we made the reservations, we told them it was Taylor's birthday. And they all, I don't know if they pre-signed them, whatever, if they did, still cool. But they gave her a birthday card and all the servers and people that worked there all signed it. So that was kind of cool. Okay. I mean, yeah. Who does that? So that's what I got for you. I have one more thing that kind of ties in with story time and food of the day. But if you have something, I want to hear it first.
Well, let's go GPP food of the day and talk about, you know, Chief's new lifestyle change. So I've had a lifestyle change recently where I'm not eating meat, so to speak. So, you know, no beef, no pork, no chicken, only eating seafood. They call it being a pescatarian. That's the official term. I'm not going to do this forever, but it is something I decided to do recently. And I am going to mostly stick to it. So, Luch, I've been mostly eating fruits and vegetables, mostly with fish or shrimp. I've had some scallops. And so, and I love scallops, by the way. I'm still eating rice, still eating bread. Like I'm not trying to just cut out all the things I love, but I have had a focus on just eating a little bit differently. I haven't had any problems at the doctor or anything like that, but it's just something that I felt like I should do, and so I'm doing that. And let me just say, of all the things that I've enjoyed, if I've got to go like grab something quickly, I don't know how many people have a Captain D's where they are. It's a seafood, kind of like a fast food seafood joint, Captain D's. They've got a grilled lemon pepper whitefish. And let me just say, Luch, coming from a place that's not a sit-down restaurant, it's really good. Lemon pepper whitefish at Captain D's. Really good stuff, in my opinion, in terms of flavor. Really good stuff. Yeah, my favorite fish is cod. It's nothing compared to cod, but the flavor, really good.
I was super late to the lemon pepper seasoning party, but now I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, it's really awesome. Good.
Changes the game. That's awesome, man. I'm awesome. I'm excited to hear and follow your progress with that And that's awesome, man. Being in the South, I'm sure it's a little easier having access to some better. I mean, yeah. Trust me, there's better.
And seafood. I live by the coast, so I can get seafood anytime. Like, we've got local seafood places I can go to and get, you know, fresh stuff prepared for you. It's amazing.
You know, I worked in the restaurant industry years ago, and I'm really conscious. And like you, I always tip it at least 20%. You have to borderline insult me to get less than 18% if I'm tipping. I just know the industry stinks, and it happens. But I'm pretty conscious when I go out and tip. And you know, you treat me with respect. You know, you say hi, you do your job, and I love it. I get it. I've been there, and that goes the same for me, and not only the restaurant industry, but you know, I don't know. You go to the Christmas tree farm, and someone ties your tree on the roof. You tip them a couple bucks. You know, you have valet parking somewhere. You tip them a couple bucks. You know, you're playing craps. You tip them a couple bucks when you wing. You know, whatever it is. Like, I'm pretty conscious about tipping, and the tipping culture has kind of been a popular debate over the past, I don't know, couple years, where some people are saying, wow, the tipping culture is getting out of control. Some people demand tips or get arrogant when you don't tip them, when, you know, traditionally maybe you wouldn't get tipped for that service. And now you go to restaurants where or you might even be getting takeout, or you might be buying something random, but all these point of sale systems, they flip over the screen and they say, do you want a tip? And you kind of feel like a jerk. So, you know, if you don't tip them in certain situations, I suppose, or, you know, you see them roll their eyes once in a while. I don't know, whatever. Anyway, I'm generally pretty conscious. And, you know, one of my debates is, and I'm sure people have different takes on it, is like, when I get takeout food from somewhere, like I don't tip. If I'm eating in somewhere, like, I tip really well. If I'm at some niche establishment where they're doing some kind of preparation in front of me or whatever, like, I'll tip. Like, I don't know. I'm pretty conscious. And I'm not. So this example, and I saw it for the first time when I was on the plane, and I've flown quite a bit in my life, and I've never seen anybody do it. And I'm not saying it's wrong at all. I was just like, huh. I never even like thought of tipping the stewardess, like, who would just pass out like the Pepsi and the juice or the peanuts and the crackers. And then, like, the person that sat in our row tipped stewardess, and like, I wouldn't want that job. Kudos to the flight attendants and stewardess, because you deal with some crazy shit on airplanes, and the public, you know, everybody acts a fool. And still, like, I don't want to pass peanuts out to 300 people, and they put it, you know, generally they all have a smile on their face and they do a great job. But it never, like, maybe if I bought alcohol, and I've only done that a couple times on the plane, and usually I'm paying with a card, but I never even thought of just tipping if I'm just getting like peanuts or pretzels or like a soda or something. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I actually never thought about that either. Now, you know, in terms of like, you know, the person at your hotel, like, I've heard, hey, you know, just leave them a few dollars on the pillow. Yes, and they'll know it's for them. Like that, you know, but man, on the airplane, that's actually a unique one. I haven't even thought about that.
Like, I almost felt bad that I never thought about it for a second. I'm like, that I've never, if I feel better, you've never seen it. I've never seen it, but I mean, hey, it's 2023, but still, and those people work hard. Like, I would not want to do that job. So, I don't know.
But they get paid a lot more than your person at the hotel or that. Trust me. They get paid a lot more. So I think that's why we would not have. That's not something we would have considered, I don't think, ever.
Right. I mean, you got servers at restaurants making, you know, $2.85 an hour kind of thing, right?
Like, right. Totally. Absolutely.
But unique situation, some food for thought, if you will. Chief, what do you got going on this week? Where can people find you?
I got so much going on, man. I'm going to be doing some stuff for Owner's Box, which is a new GPP site that we can go over and get a little overlay in. So I'm going to be in those streets. Still, of course, hanging out with my good friends at Prize Picks. And catch me in the Pop Shop. Catch me on the Twitter sphere at ChiefJustice06. Catch me on the Blitz Show. And it's going to be a good party for NFL this season.
We'll be back at you next week. Ton of Roto Grinders and Scores and Odds content coming at you. Make sure you're checking out both sites. For my guy, Will Priester, I'm the Looch, Justin Carlucci. Good luck, everybody, and see you next week.